Morning. So nice to see all of you on this chilly, cloudy, rainy Jerusalem morning. Hope you're all staying warm, staying dry. This morning, I'd like to explore together with you a topic that is a constant source of conflict and controversy here in the state of Israel, and that is Shabbat observance in the public sphere. Now, while the state of Israel is the Jewish state, not everything that's done here in the state of Israel is according to the Torah, according to halacha. One of the things that we explore together in this series of classes are areas of public policy and contemporary issues. Things that are taking place here in the state of Israel through the lens of halacha. So this morning I'd like to explore together with you the topic of Shabbat observance in the public sphere, which, as I said, is always a source of constant conflict and controversy. It's always a thorn in our side. You know, whether it's Israel hosting Eurovision back in 2019 and, you know, public Chilul Shabbat, public Sabbath desecration that was taking place in order to prepare for the events and events being held, international events being held here on Shabbat itself or after Shabbat, which would require Sabbath desecration, or whether it's things like building roads and highways and a train system network of railways. I remember a number of years ago, there was work being done on Israel's railways, which, pardon the pun, threatened to derail the government or topple the government, unseat the coalition, as UTJ and Shas threatened to leave the coalition. If work continued to be done on the railways on Shabbat, and you know, it would force early elections, something unfortunately we're all too familiar with. But in recent years, you know, every so often there's a discussion of public transportation on Shabbat in places like Tel Aviv, or recently there was a whole big machloket, mavak, sichsuch with regards to stores being open on Shabbat in Tel Aviv, and what types of stores. Certain stores were given permission to stay open, like, you know, currently with the pandemic, a store that is considered chiyuni, essential, can stay open. So, you know, they had decided that certain makolets, certain shops, certain you know, food stores could stay open, but not others. And you know, people wanted to open. They say, how, you know, how is it possible that these stores can stay open and we can't open on Shabbat? So this is constantly a discussion or a public conversation. This is constantly something that is taking place here in the public sphere. And one area where the poskim have really discussed this, and this will sort of be a case study for us this morning, is the electric grid, meaning making use of electricity on Shabbat. Because, you know, while we, you know, are sitting at home and enjoying Shabbat and observing Shabbat, we are in a sense benefiting from the desecration of Shabbat by others. There are Jews that are working to maintain and make repairs to the electrical grid while we're sitting at home and eating our hot cholent and enjoying our you know, our lights and our electricity. And so that's an area that we'll explore together this morning. But the underlying question is, you know, when we talk about Shabbat observance in the public sphere, besides for the fact that, of course, you know, each and every one of us would love to see a Shabbat that's observed among the broader public. We'd love to see the entire Israeli society observing Shabbat. We recognize that that's, you know, right now not a reality. Although certainly in the public sphere and with regards to shops being open and malls and places of entertainment and theaters and public transportation, you know, we'd love to see a public policy here in the state of Israel that is sensitive to Shmirat Shabbat and that cares about Shmirat Shabbat, at least on a a governmental level or a municipal level, that either the state or each municipality, each city has certain guidelines. But one of the major issues, one of the major questions is, one of the underlying questions is, how does it affect each and every one of us? So, you know, we are home celebrating Shabbat together with our families. And while it may break our heart that there are others here in the state of Israel that are not observing Shabbat, at the end of the day, how does it ultimately impact on us? So that's another question. Now, the question then, of course, is it permitted to benefit from the public desecration, or the desecration, be it public or private, the Sabbath desecration of someone else, someone who is not religious, someone who identifies themselves as chiloni, as secular? How can we, in good conscience, benefit from the chilul Shabbat of another? And as I said, you know, we'll take a look at the Chevrat HaChashmal as, or the utility companies as a case study this morning. But I'll put some sources up here on the screen that we'll explore together. This is a Mishnah from Masechet Trumot. And the Mishnah here, one second. This should work. I don't know why. Okay. Yes. Okay. Can everyone see the sources up here on the screen? Okay, great. Good. So the Mishnah in Masechet Trumot in the second parak teaches, Hamavashel b'Shabbat shogeg ye'achel, mezid lo ye'achel. One who cooks on Shabbat, so we're talking about an Isur Torah. Okay, we're talking about a Isur Malacha, one of the 39 prohibited categories of work on Shabbat. One who desecrates the Shabbat, if it's done b'shogeg, if it's done accidentally, ye'achel, may eat. Now, it's not clear who we're talking about. It doesn't mean he can eat. What about others? Can others eat from the food that he cooked on Shabbos? We'll see in a moment. Mezid lo ye'achel. But if it's done intentionally, then he may not eat. Again, are we talking about the individual? What about others? So, as I said, this is a very practical question. Can we benefit from the Chilul Shabbat done by others? People are, let's say, building roads. They're putting up the infrastructure for railways. Well, we're not going to travel on those roads or take that railway on Shabbos. We're not going to have benefit from that work done on that Shabbat. But, you know, a few months later, once the project is finished, we might drive on those roads or we might ride a train. If work was done intentionally on Shabbat, are we allowed to have any benefit from it? That's the underlying question here. So it's not clear from the Mishnah here in Trumot what the parameters are. It just says if work is done, or if one cooks, really, that's the example, but references to work in general. If one cooks on Shabbat, b'shogeg, he can eat it. If it's b'mezid, he cannot eat it. So again, we'll have to try and define and explain the Mishnah. What is the Mishnah teaching here? There's actually a three-way machloket in the Gemara as to how to understand this Mishnah. It's not so simple. And this machloket appears in a number of places in the Gemara. Here I put the Gemara from Masechet Bava Kama on Daf Ayin Aleph. But this three-way machloket appears in a few different places. It appears in Masechet Chulin. It appears in Masechet Gittin. Okay, it appears in Masechet Ketubot. And here I put it from the Gemara in Bava Kama. Okay, so we have a three machloket. Now the Gemara there in Bava Kama says, Hashochet b'Shabbat uviyom Kippurim, someone who slaughters on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur. Shochet is also one of the 39 prohibited categories of work, not allowed to slaughter on Shabbat, okay, or on Yom Tov, on Yom Kippur, on Yom Tov, sorry, on Yom Tov you're allowed to because of Ochel Nefesh, sorry. But on Shabbat, you're not allowed to slaughter. Okay. So the question that the Gemara asks is, well, even if one has violated an Isur Torah, is there Shchita Kshera? Is the meat kosher? Meaning, in slaughtering this animal, one has violated an Isur Torah. But is the Totza'ah, is the fruit of their labor, so to speak, permitted or is it prohibited? So the Gemara here says, "Hashochet b'Shabbat uviyom haKippurim." Someone who slaughters on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur, afal pi shemitchayev benafsho, even though they are literally obligated in the death penalty, okay, if they did it in a public way, if they were warned, if there were witnesses, etc., 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 for Sabbath desecration, okay, they are chayav mita. Nevertheless, the Gemara says, "Shchitato k'sheira." Their shchita, the animal they slaughtered, is kosher. Shchitato k'sheira. Their shchita is k'sheira. So now the Gemara wants to tease out why that is and when it is. When is it kosher? Is it kosher immediately, or maybe you have to wait till, you know, after Shabbos? So the Gemara brings our Mishnah. Amrei, they said, "Savar la k'Rabbi Yochanan Hasanlar." This teaching, this statement that this shchita is kosher, well, that is in accord with the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan Hasandlar. We'll see in a moment what the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan Hasandlar is. Ditnan, as we have in a Mishnah, the Mishnah that we began with, Hamevashel b'Shabbat b'Shogeg ye'echel, b'Meizid lo ye'echel. Someone who cooks on Shabbat accidentally may eat. If it's intentional, may not eat. Divrei Rebbe Meir. This is the opinion of Rebbe Meir. Okay, so as I said, it's a three of mechloket. Now, what is Rebbe Meir teaching here? So the way Rashi and others understand the Gemara is that what Rebbe Meir is teaching is that if the food was cooked intentionally on Shabbat, it may be eaten after Shabbat. It may be eaten by everyone after Shabbat. It sounds like what Rebbe Meir is saying is it cannot be eaten on Shabbat, but after Shabbat, everything is permitted. Okay, that's what many explain to be the opinion of Rebbe Meir. Okay, not so clear from the actual text of the Gemara, but that's what we assume Rebbe Meir's position is, that on Shabbat it's prohibited, but after Shabbat it would be permitted. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda, however, says, "B'shogeg ye'achel b'motzei Shabbat, b'meizid lo ye'achel olamit." According to Rabbi Yehuda, on Shabbat, if it was done unintentionally, if he cooked unintentionally, so then he can eat after Shabbat. But if it was done intentionally, he can never eat from the fruit of his labors. He can never eat from the product of his Sabbath desecration. We'll have to ask the question, what about others? Can others benefit from the Sabbath desecration? Okay. Now, it's interesting. The Lashon of the Mishnah is eat, right? So there's a whole discussion. It's beyond the scope of our class this morning, but there's a whole discussion whether he can benefit financially or whether he can make benefit from, let's say, the pots and pans and things that were used for the cooking that was done on Shabbat. Okay, but the Chachamim prohibited him from eating on Shabbat. Okay, and according to Rabbi Meir and according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim prohibited him, if he did it intentionally, forever from getting benefit from that food that he cooked. So even on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, he wants to eat, you know, Shabbos leftovers. He can't. Rabbi Yochanan Hasanlar Omer, Rabbi Yochanan Hasanlar says, "Bishogeg, if it was done unintentionally, yechel motzei Shabbat lacherim velo lo." That on motzei Shabbos, others can eat, but he cannot. Even if it was done unintentionally, he cannot have benefit from work that was done unintentionally. Okay? Even though it was unintentional, he cannot. However, others can. B'meizid, but if it was done intentionally, lo yechel olamit, lo lo velo la'achirim. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Sanlar, Rabbi Yochanan Sanlar, he can neither get benefit even after Shabbat nor others. So if we would paskin like Rabbi Yochanan Hasanlar, it would sound like, you know, if work was done on a road, on a highway here in the state of Israel on Shabbat, right? No one would ever be able to travel such a road. No one would ever be able to benefit. Rabbi Yochanan Hasanlar is the most machmir position here in the Gemara. So again, we have this Mishnah in Trumot, and there's a three-way machloket, a three-way dispute as to how to interpret the Mishnah. According to Rabbi Meir, if intentional, the food may be eaten after Shabbat. Even if intentional, by everyone. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if intentional, others may eat of the food after Shabbat, but the transgressor himself is prohibited from eating the food even after Shabbat. He's prohibited from eating the food, Rabbi Yehuda says, lo yechel olamit, forever. Okay, he can never get benefit from the food that he intentionally cooked on Shabbat. And according to Rabbi Yochanan Sanlar, if intentional, neither the transgressor nor others may benefit from the food. That's the three-way machloket that we have in the Gemara here in Bava Kamma and in Chulin and Ketubot and Gittin. Now, how do we paskin? Okay, that's the shaila. That's the shaila. So Tosfot rules like Rabbi Meir. That is the most makil position, where even the individual who intentionally cooked on Shabbat may eat the food himself after Shabbat. He can eat the fruit of his labor, the fruit of his Sabbath desecration, so to speak. Okay. However, most Rishonim, the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rosh, rule like Rabbi Yehuda. And that's how we paskin. And that's here how the Shulchan Aruch paskins in Hilchot Shabbat, in Siman Shin Yud Chet. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. That, here, Hamavashel b'Shabbat, and the Rama adds, in the name of the tour, Osh she'asa achat mishar malachot. It's lav dafka bishul. Could be one of the other 39 prohibited categories of work. Another malach, another iser. Torah, there's a question whether we apply this to Isurei Derabbanan as well. But someone who violates the Shabbat, whether it's with cooking or does something else, bimezid, intentionally. Okay, we're talking about intentional Sabbath desecration. Asur lo le'olam. It's prohibited for that individual forever, even after Shabbat. He cannot reap the fruits of his Sabbath desecration. Okay. Ula achirim, but for others, mutar lematzei Shabbat miyad. For others, it's permitted for them after Shabbat, immediately after Shabbat. The Shulchan Aruch adds the word miyad. It's permitted immediately. Now, the Taz and the Mishnah Berurah point out that this is different than, for instance, work that was done by a Gentile for a Jew on Shabbat. Whereas, you know, when it comes to work that was done expressly for a Jew, so you have to wait the amount of time after Shabbat as it would take to perform that particular activity. So, you know, let's say a Gentile baked you a cake on Shabbat. And brought it over and baked it specifically for you. Assuming it was a kosher kitchen, okay? Maybe it was someone that works in your home, so they were using your utensils, everything's kosher, yosher, except that they did it on Shabbat. So, you know, you didn't ask them to do it, they did it for you anyway. Even if you would have asked them to do it, the Chachamim say, you have to wait, you can't eat it on Shabbos, you have to wait after Shabbos, the amount of time it would take to bake that cake, okay, to perform that activity, whatever it is. So, and why is that, and why is there a difference here? So, we're talking about different knasot, different penalties that the Chachamim imposed on people. So, whereas, with regards to Amira La'akum, the Chachamim were concerned, as the Taz and the Mishnah Berurah explain here on the Shulchan Aruch, the Chachamim were concerned that, yeah, you know, the person's not a Jew, so, you know, you might become accustomed to ask them to do things for you. If you know that you can benefit immediately after Shabbat from work done by a Gentile on Shabbat, so, yeah, you'll ask them to do work for you. It's not such a big deal. So the Chachamim said, okay, therefore you have to wait. You have to wait a certain amount of time after Shabbat before you can benefit from that work that was done for you. Whereas here in our case, the Shulchan Aruch says, "U'la'cherim mutar l'motzei Shabbat miyad." Immediately after Shabbat, it's permitted for a Jew to benefit from work done from another Jew, because as the Taz and Mishnah Berurah explain, you're not going to ask a Jew to do work for you on Shabbat Chas V'Shalom. Whereas you may ask a non-Jew to do work for you, and you may benefit from the work of a non-Jew because he's not obligated in the midst of Shabbat. So the Chachamim made you wait an hour or two after Shabbos before you can eat that cake. However, Chas V'Shalom, you're not going to ask a Jew. You're not going to be accustomed to having a Jew do work for you on Shabbos. So the Chachamim did not need to impose that waiting period, so to speak. And that's why, according to the Taz and the Mishnah Berurah, you can have benefit immediately after Shabbat. So this is how we paskin. So again, we saw that in the Gemara, there's a three-way machloket as to how to interpret the Mishnah in Masechet Trumot. And we paskin like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that work that was done by a Jew on Shabbat intentionally, a Jew desecrated the Sabbath intentionally on Shabbat, while he may never benefit from that activity, we may benefit from that activity immediately after Shabbat. So in the case that I mentioned of roads being built or, you know, infrastructure for trains, while at different points, you know, over the past several years, different religious parties have threatened that they're not going to make use of the public transportation, they're not going to make use of the trains if they're going to be built on Shabbat. According to Halacha, according to the Shulchan Aruch, even if work is done intentionally on Shabbat, as painful as it is to see that taking place, we may benefit from it after Shabbat. Okay? It poses no problem long term. However, we have a more pressing question. What if work is being done on Shabbos and we're benefiting from it directly on Shabbos? That is a more practical question that we'll have to deal with. And as I said, the paradigm for this question, the example that the poskim deal with, our case study this morning, is the electrical grid, the Chevrat HaChashmal, the electric company, where there's constantly repairs being made to the electrical grid. There's routine maintenance. And in order to maintain a constant flow of electricity to our homes, there needs to be this routine maintenance. There needs to be these repairs being done. Now, are all of these repairs being done by Gentiles? Are all of these repairs, or is this maintenance being done by Gentiles? I don't know. Not so clear. I mean, ideally, if all things were perfect, if the state was run according to halacha, you would try to create a situation where that would be possible, or where everything is automated. Now, while many things are automated, some of the routine maintenance is automated, doesn't need to be done actively, at least by a person on Shabbat, by a human being. Many things are done in the field. Many Isurei Melacha, Isurei Torah, are being performed in order to continue supplying us with electricity. Okay, so historically, you know, this is the major issue that the poskim dealt with regards to Shabbat desecration in the public sphere, at least as far as things that we may benefit from. Yeah, we could talk in the future about public transportation and keeping stores open, etc. Maybe a little bit later on this morning, we'll touch on some of those issues just with regards to the Jewish character of the Jewish state. But, you know, this is a very relevant question. In order to supply electricity to millions of homes, the electric company has to maintain their grid. There has to be routine maintenance, and repairs have to be made on Shabbat. So that's the question. Is it permissible for you and I to make use of electricity on Shabbat, which is most likely the product of Shabbat desecration? Here we're sitting in our homes, and our homes are lit up, and we've got timers going on. You know, we come back from shul, and the lights go on so we can have lunch, and we have food on the plata, okay? And in the winter, we've got heat in our homes, and in the summer, we have air conditioning going on and off. So can we benefit from work that is most likely being done on Shabbat? So the Chazon Ish and others were machmir. The Chazon Ish writes in Or HaChaim Lamed Chet that it's prohibited to make use of electricity on Shabbat. That is the direct result of Shabbat desecration. And this is the machmir approach that was taken by the Chazon Ish and others. And he adds there in Simen Lamed Chet, or Chaim Lamed Chet there, that it's a Chilul Hashem, or it's a major Chilul Hashem. And one who gets Hana, one who benefits from the electricity, which is the result of public Chilul Shabbat, he writes, testifies, Chaz V'Shalom, he adds, that his heart is not pained by Chilul Shabbat, by Sabbath desecration. Right, so he writes, not only is it asur, it's asur legamre, but it's a chilul Hashem, and it shows that you have no feeling for your fellow Jew and for chilul Shabbat. Okay, and that is the position that some take, that the poskim that are machmir take, because as we saw, you cannot have benefit from an isur malacha on Shabbat. And that's why in some communities, maybe you've seen this before, people have generators and they make use of their own generators on Shabbat, even in Har Nof. I've heard generators on Shabbat going. I've seen people using generators in order to supply their homes with electricity without using electricity from the Chevrat HaChashmal. Before Shabbat, they turn off the electricity from the Chevrat HaChashmal. They turn on their generators and they supply their own electricity, so that they don't have to directly benefit from Chilul Shabbat. Okay? And I'm sure some of you have seen this before. But that is based on this Shita, or this Psak of the Chazon Ish, that we're not allowed to benefit from the Chilul Shabbat of others. You know, it may break our hearts that there are those in this country that are not keeping Shabbat. It may break our heart that there's public Chil Shabbat, public Sabbath desecration. But Halacha L'maisa, it doesn't really affect us, but it does. Because we, sitting in our homes, are benefiting from their Chil Shabbat. Okay, and that's the question. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, in the fourth chelik of Or HaChaim, writes a number of tshuvot addressing this very issue. And he first rules that there's some room to be lenient with regards to the electric company, because he assumes that everything is automated. And he writes there's a sveik sveika. You know, in halacha, there's a concept of a double doubt, a sveik sveika. And the sveik sveika means that it's going to be such a rare case, so we're not concerned. We're not concerned about benefiting from electricity in this case, because there's a sveik sveika. The first safek is, number one, if something will even need to be repaired. Because that's a suffix. We don't even know if their repairs are necessary. Okay. And number two, if repairs need to be made, there's another suffix, whether the repairman will be Jewish or will be Gentile. That's his fake sfeika. So he's at first lenient in his first tshuva with regards to making use of electricity. That certainly would apply in the United States. But here in Israel, I don't know. You know, I don't know if the repairman will be Jewish or Gentile. I think in a place where you have a rove of Jews, unless they make some other provisions, we would assume that, you know, if the majority are Jews who are working for the electric company, or if the majority, you know, we would assume that the repairman would most likely be Jewish if the majority are, unless, again, some other provisions are made. And you can also question Rav Moshe's underlying assumption that the grid is automated. The grid is not completely automated. While many things are automated, as I mentioned before, there's constant maintenance of the system and there's constant repairs that need to be made, just in terms of the routine running of the system. So in another tshuva, Rav Moshe questions, well, maybe the need to supply electricity to hospitals justifies the Chilul Shabbat We'll see a tshuva of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach where he addresses this directly in a moment. So Moshe and other posts could say, well, maybe, you know, we have to supply electricity to hospitals. That's called pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh is docha Shabbos, right? A little discussion. Dechia, is it docha, is it hutra? Dechuya or hutra? I think we've spoken about that in past years. But in any case, you need to supply electricity to hospitals and also to old age homes, to rehab facilities, to places where there are, you know, sick people and people that are in the category of a cholish sheyesh bo sakana. Their lives are in danger, and so you need to supply them with electricity. And once you're already supplying them to electricity, so then maybe by extension, you can benefit from electricity. Once it's being supplied broadly, because you can't only supply electricity to hospitals. In other words, once it's being supplied broadly, then you and I can benefit from the electrical grid. Once electricity is being supplied to the country. So that's one idea. Rav Moshe, though, questions whether supplying electricity is actually an act of pikuach nefesh, or it's not directly related to pikuach nefesh. In other words, yes, there are certain things that rely on electricity, but it's not directly enough related where it would be considered an act of saving life. So instead, after going back and forth, he suggests that ideally you should employ Gentiles to make these repairs and to maintain the grid. Now, Rav Moshe, in that same tshuva, as I said, there are a couple of tshuvot in or Chaim Chelek Dalet, but in that same tshuva I just mentioned with regards to Dafka, the union of Pekuach Nefesh, so he allows for using electricity to power a refrigerator on Shabbat because that may cause a hefset, a financial loss, because the food in there would spoil. And so there he's lenient, because the whole concept, what we've been mentioning so far this morning, is only asur midrabanan. The Chachamim came along and they said, you cannot benefit from the Chilul Shabbat that is being done on Shabbat by a Jew. Why? Because he's doing Chilul Shabbat on Shabbat itself, and it's not nice for you to benefit from it. We don't want to encourage it. So the Chachamim came along and they made sort of a knas. They said, we're not going to let you have benefit from it on Shabbat, okay? As a means to discourage Chilul Shabbat. It's a penalty, but it's only Asur Midrabanan. So since it's only Asur Midrabanan, Rav Moshe rules that you could be lenient with regards to a refrigerator. And Rav Moshe concludes and opines that, you know, maybe we can also apply this to supply hospitals with electricity. Although he's not completely convinced that it's an issue of Pikuach Nefesh, but nevertheless, you know, since we can apply this concept to where there's a significant financial loss and allow you maybe to power a refrigerator, okay, he says, okay, we can apply it as well to hospitals. But he's not completely convinced. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he was the clearest voice that said that since hospitals and homes with sick and elderly people require electricity, he rules, and we'll see this in a moment, that it's permitted to be mechalal Shabbat, to desecrate the Shabbat in order to supply them with electricity because of pikuach nefesh. He disagrees with Rav Moshe and feels that it is no, indeed, pikuach nefesh. And then by extension, and this is important for our conversation this morning, once electricity is being supplied in a permissible way because of sick people, so then you and I may benefit from it on Shabbat. Okay, which, as I said, is asur midrabanan, but according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, once it's being supplied to the sick, to the elderly, etc., so we may then benefit from it. Okay, once it's being supplied to the grid. So take a look here at this tshuva of Rav Moshe. This tshuva is also quoted in the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchita, and it's an important tshuva because this psak of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach here this psak of Shlomo Zalman really becomes the accepted psak when it comes to how we justify benefiting from Chil Shabbat on Shabbat. So he writes, Nira she'im b'mif'al ha'chashmal na'aseh b'shabbat ha'yitzu shel ha'chashmal ba'aveira al-yidei Yisrael. It appears that if in the electric company there is work done by a Jew in order to create, he writes, ha'yitzur shel chashmal, to create the electricity. But you could add to his words to maintain, to supply. If there's desecration of the Sabbath, or if the supplying of electricity comes at the expense of the desecration of the Sabbath by a Jew, pashutu, it's very simple, shasur lehanot b'shabbat, meha'or v'ha'esh, she'itziratam ba'aveira. It's prohibited to enjoy from the light and the fire, meaning from the electricity that is being created on Shabbat. As we said, it's asur midrabanan to benefit on Shabbat from the desecration, the intentional desecration of Shabbat by a Jew. Okay? And then just skipping, he just explains, like we did, that the Chachamim, Kansu Chachamim Shelo Lehenot Klal B'Shabbat Mimalacha Mimalechet Avera Shel Yisrael. That the Chachamim, they made this penalty, they imposed this fine or this penalty, that on Shabbat, we may not benefit from the prohibited activity of a Jew on Shabbat. Okay? But then he writes, so Alpha Gav de Bishvil Hacholim Bilvad Hayitzrichim Lohosif Rakma. Now he's talking about, you know, if we say that it's an issue of Pikuach Nefesh, right? So then maybe let's just supply electricity to the hospitals themselves. He writes, Alpha Gav de Bishvil Hacholim Bilvad Hayitzrichim Lohosif Rakma'at. Really, you could argue that to a hospital, they only have to give a certain amount of electricity, but they are giving way more than necessary. And even healthy people are benefiting, not just the chole sheyesh bo sakana, or if it's only an iser derabbanan, then it would be even permitted for a chole sheein bo sakana, someone whose life is not in mortal danger, he's just ill, he can benefit from a rabbinic prohibition. But nevertheless, he writes, V'nimtza d'me'ahi sh'ata d'kamosif na'aseh k'mevashel l'chole. D'asur l'bari, u'bifrat l'achar she'kvar harbu gam avuram. Mikol makom nir alim yudidati d'kevan she'i efshar klal l'hosif avur acholim elim ken mosif gam avur abrim harei zeh chashiv k'shochet b'shabat l'chole d'mutar shapir l'bari mishum d'i efshar l'kazay basar b'lo shchita. Says that, makes an argument that it's... The Gemara discusses, and the Rishonim discuss, what if you have a sick person and need to shecht for that individual? But once upon a time, they believed that a sick person needed to eat. He had to eat fresh meat. He had to make him some chicken soup. Okay? So not only are you violating an issur of bishul for him on Shabbos, you're cooking, but for a sick person, you can also shecht an animal. Right? There's actually an interesting discussion whether maybe it's better to give him treifa meat, Nevelus and Trefus, which is maybe a less of an Isur than Shechita, which is a Chi of Skila. In any case, he writes the following, that we allow, you know, to get this Kizayit Basar, we allow a Jew to Shecht. So yeah, we can allow those who are in the hospital already to benefit from the electricity coming into the hospital, even though they are healthy. And by extension, we'll see in a moment, people that are even not in a hospital, people that are in their homes. He says that in order to supply electricity to the hospitals where people need it, right? The people that in the hospitals that don't need it are also going to benefit from it. And once they're supplying electricity to the grid, they can't, you know, they can't only supply to the hospitals, but the entire city is going to benefit from the electricity. And he says that we don't make a distinction whether his intent was machshava, his thinking is you know, just for the sick people where it's permitted, or whether it's for the entire city, because we can't distinguish. We can't supply electricity just to a hospital, just to the chole sheyesh bo sakana, the people that are in mortal danger in the hospital, without supplying it to the entire hospital and without supplying it to the entire city. So Rav Shlomo Zalman basically is saying here, and we'll see how he develops it more in a moment, that once you are supplying electricity to hospitals where it is permitted for pikuach nefesh to save a life, and you're then, by extension, you're supplying electricity to the entire grid, then in a sense, everyone may benefit from it. Okay? Because it's being done for, we justify the Chilul Shabbos for the pikuach nefesh, for the sick people, and then once it's being supplied, you and I may benefit from it. That's how we can justify benefiting from it, where all along we're saying that midrabbanan, you're not allowed to benefit from the desecration of Shabbat by a Jew. Okay, v'lefi ha'amur nireh pashut de'lamaaseh b'chi ha'gavna. In this case, she'amalacha na'aseh al yidei akum d'vaday sharei mishum d'davka sh'akum yachol lasod b'shvil acholim. So certainly, if it's pashut, if the work is being done by a Gentile, okay, b'shvil ha nochrim bilvad, or if it's being done for non-Jews, you're allowed to benefit from work that a non-Jew does for himself or from other non-Jews, right? In other words, if a non-Jew, you know, in a hotel boils water for his own coffee, you can use that water. If he boils it specifically for you or for the Jewish guests, you cannot use it. It's amira la'akum. It's included in the prohibition of asking a Gentile or deriving benefit from work done by a Gentile for a Jew, if the work is being done specifically for a Jew. But if he does it for himself, or for not, in this case, he says, non-Jew, certainly, if he's doing it for the cholim, or if he's doing it for non-Jews, fine. But that's not the case here in the state of Israel. They're working on the grid. Number one, they're probably Jews. And number two, they're doing it for the Jewish state. They're doing it for Jews, right? But if it's done for Jews, then it's asur. And even if it's done by a Jew, he says, in my opinion, it's permitted. Why? It's compared, this is a key line here. If I was teaching my my high school students, I would say, or you know, college, I would say, you know, highlight this line. It's compared to a Jew. He says it's compared to our case of maintaining the grid and making repairs to the electric grid on Shabbat is compared to a Jew who lights a candle for a chole sheyesh bo sakana, someone whose life is in danger, and they need light. The doctor has to see the patient. They need to be treated. So we say, of course, for a chole sheyesh bo sakana, you can do it even in Isser Torah, al yedei Yisrael. Someone whose life is in danger, you can violate a Torah law even by a Jew. You don't have to find a Gentile to ask them to light the candle, but a Jew can light the candle. And once the candle is lit, the Jews in the room can benefit from that light. So again, by extension, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach allows the repairs and maintenance to be done on the grid in order to be able to supply the electricity to people that are considered a chole sheyesh bo sakana, people in hospitals and you know, elderly, sick, etc. And once it's done, so just like in a hospital room or in a bedroom, they can light a candle for the chole, you can benefit from that light as well. Okay, he says, so too here, even though it's way more than what is necessary. You see, you could argue that this is, our case is different than the case of lighting one candle for a chole sheyesh bo sakana, because that's specifically for him. But in this particular case, they're producing so much more electricity. The people whose lives are in danger, you know, how much electricity do you really need for pikuach nefesh? You don't need electricity for the entire country. You need just electricity for, you know, those hospitals, those people that are sick at home and in danger, those people that are, you know, in old age homes, whatever it is. You don't need to supply the entire country. You could argue that you can't compare the case. This is completely different. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes that nevertheless, you know, even though it's way more than you actually need for pikuach nefesh, nevertheless, once it's permitted for pikuach nefesh, then they supply electricity to the entire country and you may benefit from it. Okay? And he writes, in my opinion, and if we have determined that this repair is necessary in order to supply electricity for pikuach nefesh, or as we know in halacha, even safek pikuach nefesh is considered pikuach nefesh, right? Even where there's a doubt whether this person is in imminent danger or not, we still rush them to the hospital on Shabbos, right? You don't play games. We've spoken about that in the past. So, and he writes, and Vafilim kfar avar shau shataim ukfar hudleku sham neirot mikol makom yesh betikun hachashmal tzorech shel hatzalat nefashot kevin shehabei refuot bedikot na'asin dafka al yidei hachashmal. He adds that, it's all sorts of tests and all sorts of procedures require electricity, especially today. Everything is electric today, right? You know, I know they used to take blood pressure with the cuff and they would have to pump it by hand, right? But nowadays they don't do that. You put your hand in the cuff and it's all electric. You know, the electricity causes the band to inflate or the cuff to inflate around your arm, and then it reads and then it comes up on a screen. Everything's electric today. Efshar da'af shebepula zo nadlikim gam rivavot menorot she'ein bahem shum tzorech mikol makom ein baze shum isur. Says even through this, while again, it's permissible. Why? Because of pikuach nefesh. But once you're doing it already, even though, so now you're going to light up, you know, thousands of homes, right? Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of homes. It's permitted, he writes, and there's no isur. Okay, that's how he justifies this. So, davar, in conclusion, it appears to me sheyoter nachon lesovev et hakaftor begufo o kol hachayad kedei latzil et hapoalim mechashash isur Torah. He adds something. However, it's best for the Jew working for the Chevrat HaChashmal to, you know, flip the switch to maintain the grid, whatever he's got to do with his routine maintenance, if it's going to involve some sort of isur, better to do it klachayad, do with a shinui. You know, flip the switch with your pinky, flip the switch with your elbow, with the back of your hand. Do it klachayad, okay? And then he ends his tshuva with a devastating statement. And I think this is so important for us here in the modern state of Israel. A devastating statement. Okay, now he speaks of hashkafa. The whole tshuva, this lengthy tshuva, he's justifying how it's permissible that you and I can benefit from chilul Shabbat that's taking place on Shabbat. There's a Jew somewhere that's violating the Sabbath in order to supply our homes with electricity, in order that we can have these nice Shabbos meals together with family, in order that we, you know, can have a hot shalant and we can heat up our kugel on our plata, and we can use our heat in the winter and use our air conditioning in the summer. But then he writes, and this is so devastating. It's the afshe be'arnu de'afshar shemikar hadin ein le'esor le'anot me'hachashmal b'shabbat. Even though mikar hadin, we have justified how it's permitted to benefit from using electricity while it involves the desecration of the Sabbath by a Jew. Then it's not usur. It's not prohibited to benefit from electricity. Even if chas v'shalom, the electricity is a result of work that's being done by a Jew. Mikol makom, nevertheless, yesh ladat, you should know, שעל ידי השימוש שאנו משתמשים בשבת בחשמל, הננו גורמים שיקופו שם את הפועלים לחלל שבת. You should be cognizant of the fact, be aware, Yesh Ladati says, be aware of the fact that your use of electricity on Shabbat, when you're sitting in your home and you're enjoying from the light of electricity and you're benefiting from the hot shalant and hot kugel, and you're benefiting from the heat or the air conditioning, know that it's coming at the expense, at the cost of some Jew being mechalel Shabbos, some Jew desecrating the Sabbath. The kama mechuarhu, how ugly is it? How disgusting is it? How painful is it? Litaneg b'Shabbat be'esh zara, asher lo tziva Hashem. How upsetting is it? How painful is it to enjoy and to rejoice? We have a mitzvah of oneg, the karata la Shabbat oneg, the gedosh Hashem chubad. There's a mitzvah of kavod and oneg. There's a mitzvah to delight in Sabbath, but how devastating is it to delight in the Sabbath at the expense of someone else's Shabbos? To delight in what he calls, he here is referring to this type of electricity that is the result of the desecration of Shabbos. He calls it an ish zara, a strange fire, asher lo tziva Hashem, which Hashem has not commanded. He, of course, is alluding to the pasuk in Parashat Shmini, which describes how Nadav and Avihu were punished for bringing an ish zara asher lo tziva otam, a strange fire that Hashem did not command of them to bring. Okay, so that's how he refers to electricity, which is the result of Sabbath desecration. He calls it a strange fire. The kol shekein, and all the more so lechabed et migdashei Hashem, to honor the temples, the sanctuaries of God, elu batei knesiot umidrashot ba'urim shehem choshech velo or. Right? There's two elements. There's oneg and there's kavod. Kavod refers to things we do before Shabbos to create that atmosphere. How you honor Hashem's sanctuaries, Hashem's temples, meaning shuls, batei knesiot, and yeshivos, batei medrash, with light, which is really, he writes, darkness and not light. If it's the product of Chilul Shabbos, it's darkness and not light. The chovag dola mutelet al einei ha'eda la'ir et ha'ochim b'choshech lalechet b'or Hashem v'haya lanu l'or olam. This is how he ends his tshuva. It's incredible. He says, and there's an obligation upon the eyes of the people, which is a reference to the chachamim, to the rabbanim, to illumine the paths for those who walk in darkness, that they should instead walk in the light of Hashem, and that will be for us an everlasting light. That's how he ends his tshuva. In other words, he's saying, yes, I found a heter. How we can justify using electricity on Shabbos, which is the direct result of Chilul Shabbos. I found a heter. We could say, Alts Pikuach Nefesh, that once the electric company has to supply the grid to the hospitals, etc., for Pikuach Nefesh, we can benefit from it. We can have a hot shalant. We can have a hot kugel. We can use our air conditioners and our heaters. But even though it's permitted, it should still pain you, he writes, that you are directly benefiting from someone else's Chilul Shabbos. That is not called light, that's called darkness. Okay, this is an incredible way to end the tshuva, and it really speaks volumes for those of us living in the modern state of Israel, where on the one hand, Baruch Hashem, we've been fortunate to return to our land and to create a healthy and vibrant state, Baruch Hashem. But it should pain us that we are benefiting, whether we're conscious of it or not, we're benefiting from Chilul Shabbos of others. And that should pain us, says Rav Shlomo Zalman. And we should be conscious of that, says Rav Shlomo Zalman. And we should do what's within our power to try and change that. And so with the few minutes we have left together this morning, I'd like to just take a look with you at some fascinating quotes by some of the great Zionist leaders who themselves were not necessarily Sabbath observant, but understood the importance of Sabbath observance in the public sphere. That while they may have been brought up traditional they, many of them, threw off the yoke of Torah and mitzvos in exchange for communism, socialism, Marxism, Zionism, whatever it is, whatever the isms of the, Haskalah were, of the Enlightenment of the 18th and 19th centuries, and many of them lived here in the early 20th century. But these Zionist leaders, these founders of the State of Israel, it is shocking how they relate to Shabbos observance in the public sphere and how they relate to Chilul Shabbos. Because even while they themselves may not have been Sabbath observant, they understood that this is a Jewish state that we're building here. And that there's a certain character that we'd like to imbue in the Jewish state. And they were interested in protecting the Jewish character of the Jewish state. And there's nothing, there's no greater example of Jewish character and what sets a Jewish state apart from others as Shabbos observance. So the first quote here is from Asher Tzvi Ginzburg. Of course, you all know him as Achad Ha'am. That was his pen name, his nom de plume. And he was brought up very traditional in Russia, Hasidish family. He was the children of Hasidim. But of course, he left Orthodoxy for a Zionism, whatever, for the values of the Haskalah. But he advocated, of course, as you know, a cultural Zionism. He's considered the father of cultural Zionism. He believed that while, you don't have to practice every mitzvah in the Torah, that halacha, might not be relevant or wasn't so relevant to him, but he believed in certain ethical ideas of Judaism. He believed in the cultural heritage of Judaism. And so he writes the following. He says, you don't have to be medaktek in mitzvot. You don't have to be so careful in your observance of mitzvot in order to appreciate the value of the Sabbath. One who feels a connection, a true connection to the life of the nation and to all of its generations, our history, our culture, right, our Masora. Lo yuchal b'shum ofen letzayer lo mitziut am Yisrael bli Shabbat Malkita. You can't envision a situation where there's a nation of Israel without the Sabbath queen. If Shalomar bli shum hafrazah, you can say without any exaggeration, ki yoter mi Yisrael shamru et ha-Shabbat shamra ha-Shabbat otam. Very famous statement. He says, more than the Jew has observed the Sabbath, or more than the Jew has protected the Sabbath has protected the Jew. Very famous statement. Okay, and this he writes in 1898. Another statement here, another quote, this time from Max Nordau. Now, Max Nordau, he also was raised traditional, like many of these Zionist leaders. He was born in Hungary, and his father was even a rabbi. He was the son of a rabbi, and Nordau threw it all away. Nordau, even at a young age, he writes, at the age of 15 already, he threw away his Judaism and saw himself as a German. Okay. He saw himself as a good German. And unfortunately, like many at the time who were influenced by the Haskalah, he became very close with Theodor Herzl. Nordau, of course, is famous for, together with Herzl, founding the Histadrut HaTzionit, the Zionist organization, Tzionut, Histadrut HaTzionut, one of the founders of Zionism together with Herzl. He too was inspired by the Dreyfus Affair like Herzl, but he threw it all away. He writes, even at the age of 15, he left the study of Torah, he left the Jewish way of life, because his father was a rabbi. Ad kedei kach that he married a Christian woman. He married a Christian woman. Okay? But look how he relates to Shabbos in the public sphere. He writes, Ani omer lachem, Shabim Mishu Michalela Teshabat al Har HaMoriah. He's writing this in 1912. So this is again before the founding of the state of Israel, but he's envisioning a state, someone who will be Michalel Shabbos on Mount Moriah. He means in the state of Israel, Lav Dafka Har HaMoriah. He's being poetic, right? He's saying someone who desecrates the Sabbath in the state of Israel, who chayav mitah, they would be obligated in the death penalty. Ba'asher hu ratzal litzoch lo ben adam, ela et nefesh ha'uma. Because in that case, he's not just, he doesn't desire just to kill a man, but he wants to kill the soul of the people. So Max Nordau, who left Yiddishkeit at age 15 and married a Gentile woman, married a Christian woman, he saw the Sabbath and the public observance of the Sabbath, or observance of the Sabbath in the public sphere, he saw that as the soul of the nation. Okay, so that's Max Nordau writing in the Morgen Journal, one of the Yiddish newspapers in New York. He writes in the Morgen Journal in the 1912. Okay, now here's a statement from Meir Dizengoff. So Dizengoff is famous for being a founder and the first mayor of the city of Tel Aviv, the modern city. Right? And we'll see in a moment a poster that hung in the city of Tel Aviv that was signed by Nordau. But he writes, "In kan she'elat shebidat bilvad ela she'elat tziburit lumi." This is not a question of religion, but this is a question of public policy and national policy. L'chol am v'am yesh masoret shel hashkafot omanut. Manigim hashomrim alav, or minhagim hashomeret alav. Every nation has its tradition of thought and culture and art and customs which protect it. And he's referring to Shabbos. And this is a statement that he makes at really a public gathering that takes place in the city of Tel Aviv in its early days, where he's speaking about public policy. What should public policy be? Is Tel Aviv going to have public transportation on Shabbos? Are stores going to be open in Tel Aviv on Shabbos? Tel Aviv is the first modern city, right? The first modern Jewish city. What is going to be the character of that modern Jewish city? And then he writes, Oy lo liyachid v'oy lo kibbutz shebadel mitoch amo. Woe is to the individual or the group of people who, or maybe he means actually a kibbutz, not just a group of people, but maybe he means like the kibbutzim in the land of Israel, the agricultural settlements. Aleinu lishamer michilu Shabbat b'farhesia. We have to protect from the public desecration of Sabbath. Yoter me'asher be'ir shel akum, zkuka ha'ir ha'ivrit harishona lachtom. He says that this is not just, again, speaking in the early days of the founding of the city of Tel Aviv, the first Jewish city, the first modern Jewish city. He says this is not like a Gentile city, like other cities around the world, but the first Hebrew city must have a stamp, a unique Jewish stamp, meaning must have a Jewish flavor, must have a Jewish character. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about preserving the Jewish character in the first Jewish city. Okay? And then a statement from the letters of Ben-Gurion. Okay? Also, Ben-Gurion, not the biggest tzaddik, not trying to chas v'shalom, make any derisive comment or insult anyone here, but these Zionist leaders themselves were not religious, they were not Sabbath observant, but they saw the beauty in it. And he writes, Ulam Limei HaMenucha b'Shabbat v'Chagim yesh erech lumi klali. Just to take one little snippet for the sake of time from this quote here from one of his letters, he writes that our days of rest, Shabbos, Yantif, they have a tremendous national value, right? Not only for us as a religious value, halachic value, but even the secular Zionists, these founders of the state of Israel, the modern state of Israel, many of them who had a religious upbringing, they studied in yeshiva, they threw off the yoke of Torah and mitzvot, but they understood the value of Shabbos, at least in the public sphere. And here, another quote. This is a quote of from Chaim Nachman Bialik. Chaim Nachman Bialik studied in Volozhin under the Nitziv, right? He had a relationship with Rav Kook. They studied together in yeshiva. They knew each other from Volozhin. So he writes very clearly, Eretz Yisrael b'li Shabbat lo tibane ela techarev. Wow. V'chol amalchem yeh letohu. The land of Israel, and he's talking about the state of Israel, but it's the land of Israel without Shabbos will not be built, rather it will be destroyed, and all your hard work will be for naught, for nothing, for naught. Incredible. Israel, lo yivatel olam al Shabbat. The people of Israel will never give up on Shabbat. He lo rak yisod kiyumi ha-Yisrael. It's not only the foundation of our life and of our Jewish life, elagam yisod kiyumo ha-enoshi, but it's really the source of life or sustenance, maybe. Maybe that's not the best word, for humanity. Because other nations have taken it from the Jewish people. In some form or another. This concept of a day of rest. So, you know, it's interesting that he mentions this. Now he's referring to how, you know, the Christians have their Sabbath on Sunday, but they took it from the Jewish concept of the Sabbath. The Muslims have their Sabbath on a Friday, their day of rest, but they, of course, took it from our tradition. It's interesting that now, in recent years, you have all sorts of books being written by non-Jews about the importance of a Sabbath. They talk about, you know, how the Jews gave this great gift to the world, and how, especially in this age of technology where everyone is glued to their screens and their smartphones, people should take a day during the week and put away all other distractions and just spend time with family and experience some form of Sabbath. There are a number of books being written. A number of books been written in recent years. So then he writes, just skipping, HaShabbat v'lo ha-tarbut shel tibuchei zahav or tibuchei adama. The Sabbath has protected us and the life of our people and our essence in all of our days of wandering in the diaspora, right? During the 2,000 years of Galut. And now, Bishuvanu el Eretz Avot, Hanishlachna Acharei, Gvanei Kichli en Chafetzbo. Now, in other words, we're just going to give it up. We're just going to give it up. B'li Shabbat ein Eretz Yisrael ve'ein Tarbut Yisrael. HaShabbat hi ha-tarbut. Without Shabbos, there is no land of Israel, there's no state of Israel, there's no culture. Shabbos is our culture, is our heritage. So you see, a lot of the great Zionist thinkers and founders of the modern state of Israel who themselves were not Shomrei Shabbat, nevertheless understood the importance of Shabbos observance in the public sphere. They understood the importance of Shabbos to maintaining the Jewish character of the Jewish state. Okay. So I'll stop here and take any questions. You can unmute yourselves.
Well, once we say it's Pekuach Nefesh, why should we feel bad? Do we feel bad that the police work on Shabbat?
Okay, so it's a good question, because Shlomo Zalman is saying that while maybe you can find a heter to allow for one to benefit from the Chil Shabbos of another Jew, it should still pain you that another Jew is being Mechal Shabbos, that you're getting benefit. Even if it's in a way that's mutar, it's still not lichachila. In other words, it's lichachila for that Jew to benefit from danger. Or the example that you're giving of an officer of the law or a soldier. So that in that case, that's lechachila. Meaning, l'chachila, I can desecrate the Sabbath. I'm obligated. In other words, not only is it permitted for me to desecrate the Sabbath in order to save someone's life, someone who's in imminent danger, but it's a mitzvah for me, and I'm not supposed to wait, right? We've spoken in the past about...
But the same thing for the electricity for the hospitals, for sick people.
Before the sick people, it's a l'chachila. But for you and I to benefit from the Chilul Shabbos of some Jew at the electric company, right? For you and I to benefit and to have a hot challenge and to make use of electricity in our homes and heat and air conditioning, that's a b'di'evit. That's a real b'di'evit. Rosh Shlomo Zalman is only, he's trying to reconcile this and to find a head there, why it's even permitted to make use of electricity, why we shouldn't all have to use generators like the Chazon Ish paskins.
So with the police, for example, not everything they do are dangerous criminals. They come and tell people to stop making noise. Should I be upset that they came and did that?
Okay, so look, I think Rav Shlomo Zalman is reflecting this real reality that here in the modern state of Israel, on the one hand, it's permitted, but on the other hand, it should pain us. We should recognize that things are not being done in a l'chadchila way. Things are not being done according to halacha. That, you know, the Chevron HaChashmal, you know, they're not necessarily concerned with Chilul Shabbos. And that should pain us. While, again, yeah, Ner Lameya, you can benefit from the light, but nevertheless, it should pain you. You should have an awareness. Okay. I hear the questions. On the one hand, it's mutter, he paskins, right? But on the other hand, he writes that, yeah, you should have this awareness, it should pain you. I think, again, it's expressing this reality, this sadness, that it should pain us that there is public Chilul Shabbos taking place and that there's a lack of sensitivity to it.
Suppose late at night on Wel Shabbat, people are making noise, when he calls the police, they come and make them stop making noise. Should I be upset that now I have quiet?
No, but you shouldn't. I think it's a very different example. I mean, first of all, you know, you shouldn't call the police because of noise.
No, who only called them? Or
so you're saying someone else called them and they just came or they just heard? Okay, so I think what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is saying, it should pain you that you live in a state, in a Jewish state, that's not being run according to halacha, that there are things that can be done. There's public policy that could be put in place to protect the Sabbath. Look, we know that certain things in certain hospitals are put in place in order to minimize the Isurim, correct? No. There are all sorts of drama switches and all things put in place because there is in certain hospitals or in certain places a sensitivity to Chilul Shabbos, and we want to minimize the Isur as much as possible. So on the one hand, while it's permitted to make use of the electricity, you should be aware that it's coming at the expense of Chilul Shabbos, and that should pain you. That's what he writes. And I think to address your specific example, I think Rav Shlomo Zalman would say, yeah, also, on the one hand, we have a police force that does things on Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh, Baruch Hashem, and that's necessary, but it should pain you maybe if they're doing things that are not appropriate, that are not necessary. Okay? It should pain you. Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, could you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Okay, it's not really a question, it's just a thought, so it's maybe even just a diuk. But in terms of the hashkafa you were speaking, I don't think that we should, I think these Jews, without realizing it, the chevra that started this country with Yiddish and socialism, we really have to have huge hakaras hatov to them. And I think where it was coming from was that pintle yid within them. And I'm not trying to just be generous and fuzzy about this. I'm saying that they created miracles here. They had that tzchus. And it's not because they left everything, but something stayed within them that was so profound that they gave their lives, they gave their success, they gave their futures, they gave their reputations for something that they couldn't even articulate. And when they did articulate it, I was just reading the autobiography of Chaim Weizmann. I wish I heard a Rosh Yeshiva sound like he did in terms of definition of what a Jew is. And it's almost as a sweetness and almost naivete to it, because they subscribe to not being, and here's the smile part, card-carrying members, if you will. And I think we need to adjust ourselves as Jews who aspire to be card-carrying members, and have the real Hakaras HaTov and understand the depth of their Yiddishkeit. The depth of their Yiddishkeit was very profound. So it's not like even they didn't. They, with their kaichas and their love and their confusion and all that their stuff that all Jews have, built this land for us. So we need to be generous.
I agree with you completely. It's a very important point. Thank you, Mrs. Perlman, for making the point. It's a beautiful idea. And with that, we will end. Have a great day and a great week.
I love your class. Love.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Be well. All the best. Kol Tov. See you, Mitzvah Shem, next week.